welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
Mike.
And this is our WonderCon wrap-up episode. It's going to be a little structured, we hope, but you'll excuse us if we jump around. You know, it was a very, very long weekend and a whole lot of fun. I know WonderCon is Manny's favorite show. I really enjoy it, too.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's my favorite. I think San Diego might slightly edge it out. But I do enjoy WonderCon because it is it is a slower pace, as crazy as that is. I mean, I wasn't, you know, like Sunday was really an easy day for me. I didn't have a lot of commitments or obligations. Saturday was just as insane as any Wonder or as any San Diego day I've ever had. But it's not quite as exhausting. And yet, Manny and I both had to go to our regular day jobs today after getting home super late. So, again, excuse us if we lose our train of thought or jump around a little bit because I'm sure we're both really exhausted. So let me let you start, Manny. What's your overall impression of the show of WonderCon this year?
You know what? It's really interesting because you know how many years you've been trying to get me to Comic-Con? So this year, I think that's what happened. Because now I've gone to Comic-Con, WonderCon did not seem that big. And I was going to ask you if maybe you got the feeling that it felt smaller, or is it me just having to go on to a bigger show now and just kind of being like, oh, it's not as big. So it just felt like I didn't see as many, like video game booths, and like it just seemed to me a little less crowded. But like I said, I think it has to do with the fact that I've gone to a bigger show now and it doesn't seem as bad anymore for me. But like every year, WonderCon is still my favorite show. It just feels, because it's probably because it's the first show I ever went to. It feels homier. It feels, just you get this really cool array of like TV comic book news. You get like, you know, your regulars that you're used to seeing there. It's always a good time to see, you know, certain friends that you only get to see at shows and you know, because I hadn't been to a show since San Diego because of personal issues, but it was a really solid show, but also I'm very exhausted. It was a very busy show, like you were saying. And I am very exhausted. So, just overall, just as every year, just a great show.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way in a way. And I didn't really think about it. I guess I was kind of so busy that I just didn't think about it as far as it being feeling less crowded this year. It did feel a little less crowded, but in a way that's nice, you know, you're not jam-packed in there like sardines. But it's interesting, this year's show was, it definitely felt more laid back. You know, there wasn't like any huge news. There were a lot of smaller publishers that weren't there that just, you know, they don't always do WonderCon. I mean, everybody does San Diego. It's just the nature of the industry. You have to have a presence there, at least a panel, even if you're a smaller publisher. But WonderCon, you know, like Dark Horse wasn't there this year. They usually are. Top Cow wasn't there this year. They usually are. Valiant didn't have a booth there this year, and they usually do. And then even beyond that, there wasn't like a big splash of something, like a giant movie that kind of had everybody excited and took over the show this year and was something everybody was looking forward to. Ready Player One had a panel. They were probably the biggest name, but there's been so much buzz about it already, and it's been talked about, and a lot of people have seen it. So, I don't know. It was almost like having a panel for a movie that was already out. I know it's not out yet. I know, but yeah. Even that, again, I feel like the buzz of that has already peaked. You know what I mean? Like, so I didn't hear a lot of people talking about it. It's kind of interesting. It just felt, and I heard some people in Artist Alley talking about, they felt like it was less well attended and it just didn't have quite the I don't know, quite the impact. It just was definitely a more subdued show this year. And I don't know if that has to do with current state of events. I know there was the big march on Saturday in Los Angeles. So that caused some issues for some people with some traffic problems and everything. But I mean, the show still sold out on Saturday. I don't know. It was definitely more of a laid back show. But I just feel like, I mean, even publishers that were there, like DC, they had a lot of news that they put out, but they didn't really have a lot of talent there available for interviews. Like, they had talent, but they really limited the interviews this year. And even when I was talking to the DC PR people, they were kind of like, yeah, I'm not really sure why. I mean, last year they didn't do any interviews at all, so at least we were up from that. The previous year was when they announced Rebirth, and that was just insane, insane amount of interviews. So I don't know. I almost feel like WonderCon is kind of finding its place, and it's not ever going to be a show. It's not ever going to be what San Diego – I mean, they call it San Diego Light, and I think in a way that's what Comic-Con International wanted it to be. But as time's going by, they're kind of letting it establish its own identity. And it's that identity seems to be drifting more toward, we're going to give you some news, and then we're just going to kind of let everybody just hang out and have fun and soak in the atmosphere. But it's less of an interactive show than San Diego is, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
No, it completely makes sense, because San Diego has so many booths with like interactive events and things like you're talking about. And I remember that WonderCon did have a couple of those in the past. I mean, they had the Mario Kart, they've had a lot of video games, they had some other different experiences that you were able to try. But maybe it's just because if you think about it, there's not a lot going on movie-wise either. And I felt like maybe there just weren't enough announcements. Yeah, it just seems like there weren't enough announcements this year for different things. And all you really had was like Netflix shows or like the Cloak and Dagger and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was just premiered. Like, it just seemed like this year in particular, it just had bad timing. And, you didn't really, a lot of media outlets didn't really even need the attention yet for whatever it is. I mean, the biggest disappointment was, Warner Brothers not presenting us something with Aquaman, being that it's going to be out in December. That to me was the biggest disappointment, just because of how close it is. I mean, that's all I could really complain about. But DC like usually brings out all of its CW shows, whatever it has, but this year they didn't. The only one who was really there was Black Lightning, and that was really mellow, because they didn't have any of the actual actors or actresses. They just had the production team, and so it was a good panel, but still it was. So anyway, that's later. But it seems really. I guess it's the word I can use is this is a really chill show, because even you were mentioning to me when we were leaving that even the cosplayers, it just seemed like there was less out front, but also that has to do with the fact that they moved out the gates a little bit. And so even if you're not attending the show, you can't even get into the courtyard. So yeah, just seemed like a really chill show this year. But I think it's just the circumstances of not a lot of content to really announce.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. It just every year is different. And like you said, it's not like they set out to time it at a bad time, but it just so happens that nobody really had anything big that lined up with it to make a big announcement, to have something really kind of take over the show. You know, like last year, even though a lot of the same people weren't there, you know, a lot of the same people weren't there, I guess is the easiest way to say it. They still had the Wonder Woman panel, you know, so that was still something that really kind of dominated the show. And Patty Jenkins was there, and Gal Gadot, and you know, it made it an event that you wanted.
Gal Gadot wasn't there.
What's that?
Gal Gadot wasn't there.
She wasn't. Was it just Patty Jenkins?
Yeah, it was just Patty Jenkins.
I could have sworn who there was some. Oh, Jeff Johns was. No, Gal Gadot was there. Yeah. Remember, we went to the panel.
She was not there. She was not there. It was just Patty Jenkins and Jeff Johns.
Are you sure? I could have sworn she came out on stage when they were.
100% sure she wasn't there.
Okay. I guess I'm.
That would be a very, very memorable moment for me.
All right. I'll take your word for it. So, there just wasn't anything this year. I think Reverie or whatever that show is on NBC, the branding that was on the lanyards that they passed out, that was probably like the biggest thing. The line was huge to get into that. But beyond that, it was a DC show, you know, like it sort of tends to be. I mean, Marvel, I mean, I didn't hear one bit of Marvel news. Not one. I know Gail Simone was there and she had a spotlight panel, and I know Mark Waid was there and he had a spotlight panel, and I did see a couple bits of news just based on the fact that they are doing work for Marvel. But other than that, I didn't hear a thing. So
no, I mean, really it was just Cloak and Dagger and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but that's it.
Right. So once again, Marvel neglecting their publishing line. And it's interesting, you know, based on what we're talking about, the fact that nobody really grabbed the show and really took ownership of it this year. You know, Marvel, you've got a new editor in chief who's looking to make a splash, and you're trying to win the fans back over and convince them that you care and that you're going to start putting out good books. Marvel could have done like a full court blitz. You know, first of all, it would have been huge news if Marvel Publishing did a show or had a booth at WonderCon, because they don't do anything but New York Comic Con and San Diego anymore. And it's Marvel Cinematic that does that. And then they let the publishing part glom onto that. So if it would have been huge news, it would have been like amazing. And you know, Disney's right there. There's no reason to not be like, hey, DC, we're throwing the gauntlet down. We know traditionally WonderCon has been your show, even before you moved out to Burbank and had it kind of have it be in your backyard. I mean, just think about how much goodwill and how much excitement that would have generated. So, man, another missed opportunity for Marvel. So, and we go to talk about comic book news right now, and it's going to feel like we're once again a podcast that only cares about DC. But you know, again, DC is the one that supports us. They're the ones that, you know, allow us to read the books early and give us access to the talent so that we can, you know, talk about the stuff. And DC was the one that was there at WonderCon this last weekend, you know, promoting their stuff and talking about all the new lines that are coming out and drumming up excitement. So I can't, you know, I'd love to talk about Marvel and what's going to happen and what's coming up and, you know, how C.B. Sobolski is going to turn things around. But unfortunately, they're not saying anything. So I don't have anything for you. I'm sorry. I will say, as far as DC comic book news goes, go and listen to our Live from WonderCon 2018 podcast from Saturday. Manny and I went over all the announcements from the DC's publishers panel, which I'll just run them down real quick here. But again, for more details on our thoughts, you can go and check out that previous podcast. They started off by bringing up Scott Snyder. No, actually, I'm sorry. They started off by talking about their Zoom and Ink line. So those are the young adult graphic novels and young adult prose books that are aimed at, you know, kids anywhere from 6 to 8 to all the way up to about 14. They have a lot of great sounding titles. And again, if you want more details, go and listen to the podcast from Saturday. Then they brought up Scott Snyder and talked about basically Justice League. Justice League is what's going on in the DC universe right now. Spinning out of Metal, the end of Metal, which comes out this Wednesday. the 28th. So it's really about Justice League No Justice and the four different Justice League teams that Brainiac puts together for that, and then the three titles coming out of that. You've got the new Scott Snyder written Justice League. You've got a Justice League Odyssey and a Justice League Dark. Again, more details in the previous podcast. They also talked about the Sandman universe and the creators involved in that. And Manny and I have very different views of Neil Gaiman. Not that I'm a huge Neil Gaiman fan or not a Neil Gaiman fan. I've never read Sandman, so I'm kind of indifferent to him. But Manny sees him a certain way, and I was trying this weekend to understand his point of view, and I don't see the guy as the way Manny does. And so I don't know. It was just weird. I still don't understand why I can't get what you're. I don't see. I don't know. You see him like with a unicorn horn and like purple polka dots on his skin or something. I really do.
That's the best way to describe it.
I don't understand that. Leave it alone. I'm missing something. I'm totally missing something on that. So they also talked about Mad Magazine's relaunch with a new number one. So a lot of great news. Oh, and I don't even know if we mentioned this on Saturday's podcast, but we should mention it here. There is a new Titans and new Titans to replace Teen Titans. So there's a couple new Titans titles coming out. Other comic news. And I don't know if we talked about this on Saturday's episode either, is that Julie Benson and Shauna Benson are going to be taking over Green Arrow.
We talked about that. What we didn't talk about is the fact that Lobo has a kid.
What?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Lobo's daughter is going to be debuting in one of the Titans books.
I must have missed that somehow. Dark.
I don't have my laptop in front of me or anything, but look it up real quick. Lobo has a kid and she's going to be debuting.
Yeah, we did talk about Darkseid somehow being on the Justice League 2 and the Stefan Sedgwick art. Other DC news I'll mention is I went to the 80 Years of Superman panel. It was celebrating 80 Years of Superman and also celebrating Action Comics 1000. Dan Jurgens was on that panel. Marv Wolfman was on that panel. Jim Lee, Alex Sinclair, and there's one other. Oh, and Jason Fabok. So that was a cool panel. They talked about their favorite Superman.
Tell them what they gave you.
Yeah. Forgot about that. So we all got red trunks, because you know the trunks are back. So they handed out red trunks to everyone in attendance. So that was really cool. So hearing Marv,
so jealous.
Hearing Marv Wolfman talk about how much Superman meant to him over the years, and it was also mentioned at the panel that Marv is celebrating, I think in August this year, 50 years at DC Comics. So that is quite an accomplishment. Yeah, really incredible. Again, DC really kind of ruled the roost when it came to comic news. And another thing I'll say, so the DC had, you know, a lot of creators there. Scott Snyder was there. Mitch Gerrits was there. Norm Ratman, Dan Jurgens, Gail Simone, the Benson sisters, Jason Fabok. Is there anyone else you can think of? Joshua Williamson was there. Anyone?
You mentioned the Benson sisters already.
Yeah. So. Anyone else. So here's the thing, though. So a lot of them had spotlight panels. Like I went to the Mitch Gerrits spotlight panel. Gail Simone had a spotlight panel, which I wish I could have gone to just to talk to her about Plastic Man. But I did get to the Mitch Gerrits spotlight panel. That was a really great panel. Moderated by Jason Immonen, went to the Jim Lee spotlight panel. And the thing is, and this is a perfect example, what Mitch Gerrits was talking about, how he was doing pages in his hotel room, like right up till the start of WonderCon for Mr. Miracle. And he was feeling really kind of burnt out a little bit. And then he goes to the show and he has a great time interacting with fans. Everybody's so appreciative of his work on Mr. Miracle. And he's there on Sunday at a spotlight panel just talking about how it re-energized him. And he's like, now I can't wait to get back to drawing more Mr. Miracle. Like, it was so great. And so I really feel like, again, you know, not to bang on this drum, DC, DC, DC. But being that their creators are there and they're meeting fans and they're, you know, getting these kind of reactions, it helps inform the work. It helps make the work better. You know, the same thing with Benson Sisters. You know, their run on Batgirl and the Birds of Prey is coming to an end, but they're there at the show and they're interacting with fans, and fans are telling them how much they loved the run and how excited they are to see them on Green Arrow. And it just, that kind of back and forth and that kind of interaction with fans is what these cons are for. And DC seems to get that. They understand that. And unfortunately, Marvel doesn't. They don't think it's important, apparently. Like, I don't know. And so it's one of the best things, you know, being able to see Jim Lee, being able to, you know, see Scott Snyder. And you know, I didn't sit down and interview Scott. You know, I have many times in the past. It didn't happen this time. I wasn't like disappointed that I didn't or anything. But, you know, I still saw him. I still said hi. We still had a conversation. And so it's those kind of relationships and that kind of interaction that allows us to help them, help the creators understand what the fans are feeling and how their work is being received. And and that's what's important. And that's why, again, you got to give the nod comic wise at this show to DC. What do you think, Manny?
No, I completely agree with you. I mean, when I got the chance to finally talk to Mitch, I was telling him how, you know, I was so excited about the book, how I was selling it, how his Mr. Miracle art, you know, just really grew on me and I loved it. And then, I showed him I told him I had even made a coffee cup out of it, to go because, you know, I need to skate mornings. And he's like, oh, you know what? I remember seeing that on Twitter. So that was pretty cool. And then you're right. I mean, being able to, because you and I read these books every week. So to be able to have just regular conversations with these guys, it's amazing. There's not a lot of outlets where you can do that. You can't, most of the time you can't have a conversation with people from your favorite TV shows or, you know, other baseball players or whatever, sports figures. And comic books, WonderCon, and especially like DC Comics, really allows you to do that, to interact, to be almost hands-on with what they're doing. So, yeah, I completely agree with you.
Yeah, so it's really kind of special, and I'm very appreciative that we get to do that. The only other really bit of big comic news that I saw come out of WonderCon, and this is, I'm actually surprised I'm not hearing more people talk about it, and that's that IDW, after 12 years, is having some big event, Omnicron or something like that, that's basically going to end their Transformer universe. So, as far as I know, IDW hasn't lost the license to Transformers. So I almost think that maybe this is a way to kind of clean up Transformers. I mean, they've put out, you know, a bunch of different Transformers titles over the years, Transformers More Than Meets the Eye and regular Transformers and all these different miniseries and arcs and whatever. And I'm not familiar at all, with the Transformer corner of the IDW universe, the Hasbro universe. But, you know, we did see them bring ROM Space Knight back recently. They continue to publish G.I. Joe. They've got, you know, Mask over there now and Action Man and a couple of other titles in that Revolutionaries title that's going on. And so maybe this is just a way, again, to kind of clean it up. Like, let's just have a big event and end Transformers, and then we can start over clean. You know, Chris Ryle left after a long tenure working for the company. So this might tie into that as well. But it's definitely noteworthy, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more about it in the future.
So speaking of IDW, did I tell you what happened at the booth with Jeremy Lambert, the writer for Goosebumps?
Yeah, I saw you talking to him, and you mentioned it. You want to tell listeners?
Oh yeah, I mean, talk about it. Talk about being interactive. We were just talking about that. So Jeremy Lambert, he's the writer for Goosebumps, the series that they have there, and he was signing, and he didn't really have anybody at the table at the moment. But I realized who he was, and so I pulled out my phone, and I said hi. So I introduced myself, and then I showed him the image of Emma with the Goosebumps book, because he had liked it and commented on it when the Wednesday that the book came out, because Emma was really excited. She's a big Goosebumps fan, especially Slappy the dummy. So when I showed him that, his face lit up and he remembered it. He said, oh my God. He goes, I remember this picture. We hadn't had any feedback that day yet of the book. And we were really worried. We were wondering what the vibe was out there for it. And then this popped up and we were so happy to see like a young reader, like very excited to see it. And it really, really made our day that they were sharing it with each other. So that made my day to know that my daughter's book, my daughter's picture, her expression for the book, it had that kind of impact on him. And so he signed a number one for her, personalized it, and sent some stickers over for her to enjoy some Goosebumps stickers. So that was a pretty cool moment.
Yeah, and that'll segue us into the shopping at the show portion of the podcast. I guess you'd say IDW actually had a couple of exclusives that did really well. They had a Shattered Grid, I think, is the crossover that's going on with Power Rangers. You know, Kyle Higgins was there at the show. And they had a special cover for that was going – I saw some online for like $200. It sold out almost immediately. So that was interesting. And again, I feel bad for people that can't get to these shows and end up having to pay so much for them on the secondary market, but I'm not really sure what the answer to that is. You know, it's like, that's what makes some people go to these shows, you know, to get the exclusives. Because I don't know, it's just the nature of the industry. There was also a special Sonic the Hedgehog number one that I know is going for a premium online as well, partly because it's out 2 weeks before I think the title doesn't come out till like April 16th or something. So they were able to get it early at the show. So people that are really, actually, I think it's the 18th of April. That's a Wednesday. So yeah, people that love Sonic and want to know what the new direction is now that it's at IDW instead of Archie. Plus it, you know, is an exclusive cover. So that was another, book that I heard a lot of people talking about. As far as small publishers, Hex 11 was there, Hex Girls, who we're big fans of, and they had a really cool idea. They had these temporary tattoos, and Manny and I wore them for a couple days of the show, and it really, people were like, what's that? What's that? So it kudos to them for coming up with a great idea, and really cool to have this tattoo on our hands, because it just looks cool, but then it engenders other people to ask, and we get to say, hey, go check out Hex 11, blah, blah, blah. So they did really well at the show. Usually at WonderCon, that's a show where I try to discover one or two other small publishers. I didn't do that this year. Again, Saturday was just like a super busy day covering panels and such. But that being said, we did walk through the small publishers area and nothing really jumped out at me. Not to say there weren't some good books there. Again, I just didn't – it wasn't a priority for me this year. Artist Alley was kind of a mixed bag. I talked to some creators who did really, really well, and some who did not so well. So that was interesting, but there was a ton of great art. There are a ton of really awesome creators. I mentioned a lot of them, like, you know, Jason Fabok had a table, Gail Simone, Kat Staggs, Mitch Gerrits, Dan Jurgens, Norm Ratman, Todd Knock, Jason Metcalf was there, just a lot. Chad Harden was there. So yeah, a lot of really, really good art was there. And when it comes to getting commissions and prints and stuff like that, that's where WonderCon has it all over San Diego, because San Diego is so big, and you know, a lot of it attracts people from all over the world. For some of them, it's a once in a lifetime trip, and they're ready to spend money. And the other part of it is you know, San Diego, you don't actually pay for your artist alley table, but there's still so many other ancillary costs. If you're going to San Diego, you know, the cost of your materials, the cost of your travel, because unless you're a guest of San Diego Comic-Con, yeah, they're giving you the table for free, but they're not paying for your hotel, your travel, paying to have all your the stuff you're going to sell shipped there. If you're going to be doing commissions or creating artwork there, you've got to pay for your supplies. There's just a lot. The food, everything's expensive in San Diego around that time. So again, it still costs you a lot of money. And so for that reason, those couple reasons, both supply and demand reasons and just financial necessity reasons, things at San Diego tend to be more expensive. You know, you're going to pay more for a commission. You're going to pay more for a print. You're going to pay more for, you know, a sketchbook, all that kind of stuff. And it's just a reality of the situation. So, you know, if you can't get badges in San Diego, which has become impossible, WonderCon is a very good alternative, and you're going to spend less money and get more. It's, you know, it's more value. And, you know, I know that Saturday sold out, you know, a few weeks before the show, but right up till the day before, there was still 3-day badges available, I believe, and there was still badges for Friday and Sunday. So it's much easier to get a badge, and you're going to pay less. I mean, there were some really great artists. Larry Hama, legendary creator, has worked on G.I. Joe for decades for Marvel and now IDW. He was doing pencil sketches for $40. You could get a Larry Hama sketch for $40. There was a few others I saw that I was like, man, that is a great price. I wish I'd brought my sketchbook. As far as Artist Alley goes, great art, great prints, good prices. I got a really awesome Superman print that's got like just about every version of Superman from Brandon Routh all the way back. You know, it's got George Reeves and, you know, Tom Welling from Smallville and Christopher Reeve and just all of Dean Cain, all of them. It's really awesome. And I also got a Gal Gadot Wonder Woman print and a Jason Momoa Aquaman print. And when my daughter saw the Wonder Woman one, she's all, oh, a Wonder Woman painting, because that's how like awesome it is. It looks really, really great. It's from an artist who goes by his name's Jason Palmer. I was going to say who goes by the name. Yes, he goes by the name Jason Palmer because that's his name. Jason Palmer Art, if you want to Google that. So yeah, really, really awesome. And for those three prints, and they're big prints, like I think the Wonder Woman and Aquaman are like, I want to say 13 inches by 17 inches. And the Superman's like 30 by 24. So it's huge. All three of those, $60. And they're like high quality paper, you know, not just like, you know, poster or whatever. It's like thick cardstock. It's really great. So again, just goes to show that there's a lot of value to be had. And I'll let Manny tell you about his purchase, how and anything else he wants to add about Artist Alley shopping at WonderCon.
So when we were doing the preview for the show, I said that I was going to get back into getting my commission book going, because it's been almost a year since I really got a commission. The last one I got was one that kind of left a little sour taste in my mouth, was Scott Kobler's Adam. We're not going to talk about that anymore. But so this year I took my sketchbook and then walking around just trying to see who I wanted to get. And then I remembered back in San Diego, I had a pretty good conversation with John Boy, Myers, and talking about how much I loved his art, it was super sad that he wasn't on the, Super Sons book, the Teen Titans book anymore, and blah, blah, blah. But I remember that I had seen his, the original art from the comic book there, and I remember thinking it wasn't too expensive. So I ran over to his table, see what he had, and the prices were still there, some of the prints were still there, and I just decided, screw my sketchbook. I'm going all in. I'm going to get my first original comic book art piece. And I did. $150. And I got myself page 5 from Teen Titans Rebirth, number 1. And it's a good piece because it features Beast Boy as a shark, Beast Boy and Starfire, and there's quite a bit going on. And I found that to be a very good piece for at a very good value for all the things that are going on, because obviously the more prominent characters that are on there, and the more action, the more scenes that are going on, the higher the price of the piece. I mean, a lot of these pieces go for like $300, $400, $500 and up because it's one of a kind. It's something that was actually used in the comic book. So I am very happy to say that now I have my first piece, and that's the John Boyd Myers one. Other than that, I just getting to talk to all those guys at Artist Alley was great. The shopping in general, I don't know. I had some trouble finding, maybe I was looking in the wrong spots, but my niece really likes ponies. And I really wanted to get her some ponies. I had trouble finding those. Pop figures you can find everywhere. Shopping wise, comic book wise, I know Jace got hit the books he was looking for. I was kind of browsing for something I wanted, but again, thanks to the movie Madness, it had shot up in price. And I was going to be Mr. Miracle number 4, which is the first appearance of Big Barda, which if you actually cared about Barda beforehand, I would respect you a lot more than it was just because of the stupid movie announcement. So, a little bit of sour grapes there, but whatever. I did end up finding a Secret Wars number
8.
I'm tired. Number 8, thank you, which is the first black Spider-Man suit. And, yep, it's not in the greatest shape, but like I told Dave, not about that. It's about the fact that as a comic book fan, I now own a piece of history. So I'm very, very happy about that. I mean, I'm going to shove it into people's faces with, see, look, I have one. So pretty cool. I love it. I mean, it's the same thing I have with my Batman 200. It's in bad shape, but I have one. And I'm not in it for the money. I'm in it because I'm a fan. So shopping was pretty good. Not too many complaints there. Good time. Wish I'd have more money, but no.
Yeah. Comic wise, you know, I didn't find everything I was looking for. There are a few other, I got a couple of things. I got a couple of early Plastic Man appearances that I was looking for. So that was cool. There are a lot of bargains to be had. You know, again, it goes back to value. At San Diego, retailer space is very expensive. So you can't afford to bring boxes and boxes of 50 cent or dollar books to have people go through, because you're not going to be able to pay for your space that way. That's not the case at WonderCon. So if you're a bargain hunter, you're looking to fill out runs, you're not, you know, the books don't need to be the highest grade. Great show to go to. Great show. There's plenty of dollar boxes. One place even had 50 cent boxes that you can go through. Keep in mind, and this really stinks, like a lot of those boxes, and I've talked about this in the past, they're not sorted, right? It could just be anything. So if you're going to do that, you've got to be willing to dedicate some time to like go through, because otherwise you're just hoping to get lucky if you're just diving in here or there. So I did go through. I spent maybe, it wasn't even an hour, half an hour maybe, going through, I don't even know how many long boxes, 10 or 15, and pulled out 20 books for a dollar each. And I got some good, you know, I got some decent stuff that I had been wanting or used to have and just disappeared over the years, whatever. So that was cool. There were a few other books that I was looking for that I saw and just wasn't willing to pay the price that they were asking. It felt like they were asking too much. But again, it all goes back to supply and demand. So I if you're looking for a good shopping show, I do feel like you can just about find anything you want except for the really, really high-end stuff. You know, that you will find at San Diego and won't find at WonderCon. But I feel like WonderCon is a good mix. It has more modern books than San Diego does, for example. And there's plenty of trades, half-price trades, and omnibuses, and like all that kind of good stuff is there as well. Plenty of other merchandise. Again, I'm really surprised that Manny had a hard time finding any ponies. I guess the one thing that I didn't see a lot of, and Manny kind of touched on this earlier, didn't see a lot of video game stuff. I didn't see a lot. Like, there's a lot more toys at San Diego than there is at WonderCon. So I think probably the only pony toys you'd find would be like the really high-end stuff. Because people just don't tend to – there's just not a lot of toy dealers at – whereas at San Diego, man, they're everywhere. So, again, I think it's a pretty good shopping show. There's something for everyone. And what else I didn't see is the giant T-shirt vendors that are usually there. Stylin' Online, I think it's called. They weren't there this year. At least I didn't see them. But, yeah, kind of strange. Anyway, let's
– I think they were there. It's the one that they put up the big walls, right?
Yeah. I never saw
it. Yeah, they were there.
I guess I just happen to walk by that part. Okay. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about TV news. There were a few TV shows there. Again, I mentioned Reverie already. Neither Manny nor I were interested in that. Didn't attend the panel, so don't really have anything to say about that. Same thing with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But there were a couple of TV shows that put on presentations that we were involved in. So we'll go ahead and run those down for you. Why don't you kick it off, Manny?
Let's see. Well, we're going to go in order. I will start off with Marvel's Cloak and Dagger, which is set to debut on Freeform, June. Give me a second. I'm pulling up my notes real quick. Sorry. Oh, June 7th. So the panel was, attended by, both the actors, Aubrey Joseph and Olivia Holt. They play Cloak and Dagger. And then the showrunner, Joe Holkowski, and then the director, Gina Price, Weisswood. And the panel was moderated by the president of Marvel TV, which is Jeff Loeb. So it was really cool because Cloak and Dagger, I've actually never really paid attention to them. I really don't know anything about them. Not going to pretend like I do. But Freeform's doing the show. It seemed interesting enough, so I went to the panel, and it was a really, really good pilot. It was really well balanced, and I'm looking forward to the series. It takes place in New Orleans, so they don't really have that pressure of trying to fit them in with anybody else in New York. And then also, this was the way that something that really caught my attention was. Like, obviously, Dagger has, she can, conjure light, not crystals, but like light, daggers, I guess. And then Cloak can do the whole shadow thing. So they did a lot of lighter scenes when she was around, and darker scenes when he was around. And it allowed him maybe not to spend that much or use as much as CG as necessary because like he was already in the shadows or she was already in a really well lit situation. And it just looked like New Orleans actually really helped to bring that vibe. So it was really good. And, unlike the Runaways, which I found kind of boring, I really think that this is going to be a great show. The pilot was great. And it sets up a really complicated relationship between them, and we should have a good time watching them develop it.
All right, you want to mention a series of unfortunate events as well?
Yeah. So Nathan Fillion kicked off the panel the screening with. I mean, I know I was telling you that guy could have stood up there for 3 hours, not said a word, and the crowd was just going to be nuts. That guy has some charisma, man. Like, I don't get it, but he's great. season 2 is pretty much is picking up right where we left off on season one. Same shenanigans by Neil Patrick Harris, who plays Count Olaf. The difference this time around is that, and the reason why Nathan was there is that he's actually playing pretty much like his arch enemy, his arch nemesis. And he's going to be trying to bring him down. While at the same time, the four Baudelaires just have to deal with their next, guardian. So, looks really good, looks exciting. What bugged me a little bit, a little bit of singing in this episode that just seemed out of place. And that kind of threw off the entire episode for me. But overall, it was, a good presentation is a good, it's a good start, and I look forward to the episode, the next episode that we get to watch.
Yeah, I got a chance to talk to Nathan Fillion, at the press room for Lemony Snicket. He was the only one there, unfortunately, from, season two, but he's really excited to be on the show. He had a lot of, complimentary things to say about the show, and he's having a lot of fun doing it. So, I haven't seen season one myself except for the first episode. I'm going to remedy that as soon as I can. But yeah, it looks like season two is going to pick up right where season one left off in tone and talent wise. So I really encourage you all, if you haven't seen it, to go and check it out. Next, I think we'll talk about Lost in Space. Manny and I both attended that panel, and I don't know, should I throw myself under the bus? It's probably out there already. In fact, I told the guys at work, my day job, about what happened, and one of them's like, there's probably a meme out there of you already.
That'd be great.
So Manny and I are in the Lost in Space panel in the big arena, and it's about, I don't know, a third of the way through, halfway through maybe. And there were two seats, empty seats next to me. I had my bag on one of them, and then there was another empty one on the other side of that. And this guy comes in, you know, it's already been going for a third of it, 30 minutes. And this guy comes in, sits down in that empty seat next to my bag. And didn't look like anything, wasn't wearing like super nice clothes or anything. And I think he had like khakis on and a fatigue jacket and just, you know, seemed like a regular guy, whatever. And he asked me if I could put my bag on the ground so he could kind of spread out. And I'm like, okay, kind of weird, but that's fine. Whatever. No big deal. So I put it on the ground, and like I said, I didn't really think anything of it. And I'm watching this first episode of Lost in Space, and the end, there's like this emotional thing that happens. And I'm doubling down on this. Part of the vast majority of the reason I had this reaction, well, I can't say the vast majority, but basically I got teared up, right? And I don't show emotion easily, so, but it was a powerful moment, and I was totally sucked in and engaged in this show because it was so, so, so well done. And so I kind of took off my glasses and wiped my my eyes on my shoulder. And you know, it is what it is, right? It's fine, whatever. So I go to the press room later for Lost in Space, and I sat down at Nathan Fillion's table because the Lemony Snicket, like Netflix, tied it in. So I was the person that was at my table first was Nathan Fillion, and then they do the first rotation, and they were bringing three people over. Two of them are these like big wig, well known Hollywood producers. You know, multimillionaires, whatever. And the kid that plays Will Robinson. And one of those big wig producers that's coming over is the guy that sat down next to me that wanted me to put my bag on the floor. I'm like, okay, that's weird. Like that explains why he was, you know, late. He's already seen it before or whatever. And so as he comes up to the table, he points at me, and there's other press people at this table. He points at me, says, you sat next to me in the panel. And I'm like starting to say, yeah. And he goes, and you cried. And I'm like, really? You throw me under the bus like that in front of everybody? But then what was cool was that he followed it up by saying, usually it's us crying because we failed, but that reaction from you crying means that we won. That's exactly what we were going for. That means that we got a winner here. We've got really got something. So thank you for that, you know, reaction. And yeah, so it was really cool. He, and apparently he had told some other members of the cast too, because some of them kind of mentioned it or whatever. So anyway, it was kind of weird, but funny. And, you know, it was my honest reaction. It was a very emotional moment. So, I appreciated that he appreciated that. And I'm glad that my, you know, reaction and discomfort of him mentioning it in front of everybody, made his day, so to speak. So, as far as the show itself, during the press room, I got to talk to a lot of the actors and the, writers and producers that were involved, and to a man, they all are so happy and so proud of what they've made. And I can't imagine Lost in Space not being a hit. I mean, it looks amazing. The production values, the special effects, the actors they have that are involved. They just, you know, Toby Stevens and Molly Parker and Parker Posey. I mean, yeah, it's going to be a hit. It's going to be amazing. I think it debuts, I want to say, April 13th. So definitely be on the lookout for it. It's going to be a thing. Everybody's going to be talking about it. It's going to be Netflix's next big, big hit. What do you have to say, man, about Lost in Space, Manny?
Well, I've seen a couple of the original episodes. Not saying I'm a fan or anything, or that I really know anything about it. I know the iconic line and whatnot from the robot, but it's a lot before my time. So I don't know much about it. So this show is, I'm pretty much taking it for what it is. I'm not really comparing it to anything else. And overall, I mean, it was so engaging. I mean, the way the family has to deal with thing over thing after thing, and you're just like, I'm like, oh my God. I think I turned to you at one point, and I was like, what the heck, man? Because, like, you didn't, and I don't want to give too much away, but there's so much going on, and it's just them on the time, on their own, when I get stuck. So it was really well done, and at the same time, they're developing the characters. You get to know each of the characters a little bit. Just and kind of understand their role and who they are and what, you know, kind of really getting to know them. So it's a really, really good first episode. And then the cast, like you said, just during the panel, I wasn't at the press room, very, very appreciative and very excited. And they seem to really like the show as well. Very excited about it. So, for me, Lost in Space is a winner. I know I've already told a bunch of people today, that's the show you're going to have to watch.
Yeah, same. I'm going to be banging the Lost in Space drum basically until I don't have to anymore, which is basically going to be the day that it comes out and people binge it and it blows up, because that's exactly what's going to happen. Next up, I'll mention, speaking of science fiction shows, The Expanse. There was a panel, Science of the Expanse, on Friday afternoon. Cass Anbar, Frankie Adams, two members of the show. And it's season 3, debuts on Sci-Fi Channel April 11th. I really encourage you to go back and listen to the Cass Anbar interview from last Friday, Friday before WonderCon. Cass and I talk about season 3 and what it's like to be part of such an awesome show. And that panel was kind of thrown together at the last minute. Like, it wasn't even announced in the initial programming, like when all the programming schedule was released for WonderCon, because Cass kind of took it upon himself to go ahead and throw this together for the Expanse fans. And this goes to show how Expanse fans really care and how many Expanse fans there are out there, because even though it got thrown together at the last minute with like a week's notice, basically, there were tons of people there. There was over 1,000 people in the audience, really engaged. They had a couple of exclusive scenes they showed from season 3, and it was great. It was great. It was a real good feeling in the room. And I'm really looking forward to season 3. The Expanse is an incredible show. As far as production value goes and the feel of the show, it's very much a different tone than Lost in Space that we were just talking about, but very equal in terms of the production value and the way it looks on the screen. So we're in almost a golden age of sci-fi right now. between what's going on in Star Trek and Star Wars and shows like The Expanse and Lost in Space. So if you're a sci-fi fan, yeah, you're living in good times. And I'll throw in Stargate in that, Stargate SG-1, because I didn't put this on our list of notes to talk about, but I did attend a Stargate SG-1 panel that was talking about basically wanting to show MGM that there's still a good fan base out there and they should be putting out an SG-1 show. And Christopher Judge was there, Tilk from the Stargate SG-1 TV show. So, yeah, there's plenty of good sci-fi out there right now if you're a sci-fi fan, and The Expanse is part of that. What do you have up next, Manny?
So on Sunday, I attended the Black Lightning Q&A, and also they were going to show the next episode, which was titled Sins of the Father. Really good episode. Don't really want to spoil anything just in case some people are behind. But I cannot say enough how amazing Black Lightning is and how much I appreciate that show. It's, in my opinion, better than any of the other CW superhero shows that are out right now. This one is a little bit more grounded, even though they're still metahuman powers. A lot of the things that Jefferson Pierce goes through are real world problems he deals with his community. He deals with his students. One of the people who comes to him for help was his student before. Some of the drug dealers that are out there now were his students before, or he went to school with. So a lot of the things he deals with are a lot more personal. And they're relatable, I feel, that for, not like the Flash, who just seems to be very, very whiny. And he's supposed to be the fastest man alive, yet he's never the fastest man on the show. The panel was moderated by, it was first introduced by our showrunner, Sami Akil, who's very soft-spoken. You can tell he's not the greatest speaker, but he's there. The director for that specific episode, Adam Jondrone, and then producers Pat Charles and Lamont McGee. Actually, no, they're also writers for the show. And they talked a lot about just where they wanted to go with it, about some of the themes and concepts of the show, like taking personal responsibility for your actions, but at the same time realizing that sometimes there's outside factors that you have no control over that can affect the community. For example, they got a little political, talked about the NRA and gun control and things like that, that when the government doesn't regulate certain things, it puts certain people in compromising situations that can affect the community. So, talked a little bit about that. They also talked about the importance of Anissa's character, who I was not aware of is the first queer Black superhero on television. So, it was interesting because Sullen was talking about that he didn't even take that into account when he wrote the episode. And so when he wrote it, he was like, oh snap. He was kind of worried. He didn't know how it was going to be received. He was worried about all that. But the way he had written it out, the way I guess he's portrayed in comics, it's also natural to him that he wanted to go on with it. And then, one of the interesting questions that he got was who would want to bring to Freeland to fight alongside, Black Lightning? And his answer was Batman. He would love to bring Batman to Freeland to, fight alongside, Jefferson Pierce, Black Lightning, but, he did not give details of how or why he would do that. He said that's something to talk about later. So, just a really, really, really good panel, really interesting panel. And I have an editorial on Stop, Drop, and Watch on Black Lightning if you want to know more about the show. and you can find that at lrmonline.com. Just plug that in a little bit. But yeah, and then that was the last TV panel that I attended at WonderCon.
Yeah, the last one I attended was Ninjak versus Valiant Universe, and this is actually Bat in the Sun Productions. They usually release their content on YouTube, and they actually had some never-before-seen clips, like fully, you know, with special effects, fully finished sound effects, all that kind of great stuff, of some of the Valiant characters, Ninjak and Exo Manowar specifically, and then Ninjak and Archer and Armstrong fighting. And they looked so amazing, so good. Can't wait to see the show. Can't wait for it to come out. When the announcement for the release date for that show goes live, we will be having some of the cast, creator, director, some of them. I'm not sure who exactly yet. They're going to be coming on the show to talk about what exactly Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe is. But it's going to be amazing. It just blew me away with how good it was. Plus, I got to meet the guy that plays Ninjak, Michael Rowe, who some of you may know him from Arrow, the Arrow TV show. He played Deadshot. And then Derek Thaler was there as well, who plays Exo Manowar, and Kevin Porter, who plays Armstrong. So they're all great. The people involved, producers, and Aaron Schenke, the director, man, that's going to really surprise some people when it comes out. I know Valiant fans have been waiting a long time. Just be patient a little while longer. We're going to have some news on that sooner than you think. So that wraps up the TV portion. And for movie news, you know, like I said, Ready Player One was kind of the big movie that was there. Paramount actually did a sneak preview of one of their movies. And Manny and I mentioned this last Tuesday's episode about how Paramount had announced they were going to be doing a special sneak preview screening of one of their movies. And we nailed the prediction 100%. We said it's going to be A Quiet Place. That's the one that seemed to make the most sense on their schedule, the ones that probably done and hasn't been promoted yet and this and that. And that's exactly what it was. And you basically could go to the Paramount booth at the show at either 3:30, 4:30, or 5:30. And they, at that time, they were handing out on a first-come, first-served basis tickets to the premiere, the sneak preview screening. Unfortunately, none of those times was available to be there, and I'm sure you probably had to be there even a little bit early and kind of mill around and hope to get lucky to get one of those. Plus, I just didn't have the time to commit Friday night to going to the movie, even though it looks like it might be kind of interesting. So that was around, but I didn't hear a lot of people talking about it, and I didn't hear anyone's reaction to it either. But Ready Player One, did hear some people talking about that. It already seems like it's going to be a runaway hit. Almost all the reviews I've seen have been positive. So, but again, I think Manny had planned on going, but just through some things that didn't work out for us, he didn't end up making it. But it does come out in just a few days. And I think that if you haven't read the book, you probably should read the book first. But I'm sure at some point we'll talk about Ready Player One, where there'll be a lot of Ready Player One coverage on lrmonline.com. So be ready to go and check that out. You want to talk about Batman Ninja, Manny?
Yeah, so they did the premiere of Batman Ninja, which is their attempt at doing an anime for Batman. And I mean, they had some really, really great talent, putting the show together. I mean, people from like Afro Samurai and shows like that. I mean, I'm honestly not too familiar with too much anime. I mean, I watched some, but not enough to really call myself a fan of the genre. But, it felt really, really, messy, and I just feel like they could have taken it, they could have done a little bit less and still had a great movie, because I feel like it had a great beginning and I feel like it's a great ending. I don't want to give anything away because it was still entertaining. Don't get me wrong. It was entertaining. But it was just a mess. like so much going on, like you don't know why, and it feels out of place. And I was just like, what is, like, this is like, I get it. It's a far-fetched idea anyway, but I feel like they crossed the line in some aspects, and I'm not going to get into it exactly what it is because I'd rather you watch it and judge it for yourself. But I mean, the culminating point of Joker and Batman, that kind of samurai fight that they had, that was amazing. It was done so, so well. So the destination was great. It's just the journey where I had a problem with. The premise of the movie is Gorilla Grodd has made a time machine and he's planning on, transporting all of the villains from Arkham to another time and place so that he can take over Gotham. And what happens is when he goes to try and do that, he ends up also stepping in some of the Bat family, Alfred, and Batman, of course, and they end up in like feudal Japan during the times of the shoguns and the samurai. So and each of the villains actually end up taking over a different region of the land. And they're all trying to fight each other to unify the country. So, okay, but a little disappointed because I was really hyped for this. Maybe that's also why.
All right. And the last movie I want to mention is actually a short film. It's by Kyle Higgins. A lot of you may know him as the writer of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. He also wrote Nightwing for a pretty good run at DC, as well as a few other books in the Bat family. But he actually went to school to be a filmmaker. I don't know if you comic fans know that. So he's done a few short films in the past, and he felt like it was time to get back behind the camera. And he actually talked to me about this concept, this movie, like a couple years ago at San Diego Comic-Con. And so I finally got a chance to see it. It had been shown at a few film festivals, but this is really kind of the first mainstream release of it. And so they had a panel on Saturday and I got to see the movie. It's called The Shadow Hours. And man, I got to tell you, I know Kyle personally and he's a great guy and clearly very talented and intelligent. And I love his comics, but I expected a certain level of competency from the film just based on what I know of Kyle. But this thing so exceeded my expectations. It was so good. It was so thrilling and intriguing. And the look of it, Michael Nee is the cinematographer. He was there on the panel. And man, that guy, it looks like it's fully funded Hollywood movie waiting to happen. It's neo-noir. So think like Michael Mann, Heat kind of vibe to it. And it looked so good. They didn't skimp on anything, and I was blown away. It completely exceeded my expectations. And the cool thing is, even if you weren't at WonderCon, you can now see this for yourself. They released it through IGN.com. You can go to IGN.com. Just do a search for Shadow Hours there, all one word, and watch it. Like I think it's 18 minutes long or 19 minutes long. It's not very long, and basically, Kyle and his team put this together as kind of a proof of concept and kind of showing what the story is and how cool it'll look. And hopefully that will help them get a deal to have a feature length film with the same idea made. And they just finished the script a few weeks ago, I think Kyle said in the panel. So they're ready to go if anyone in Hollywood, any of the studios want to pick it up and make this film. So I really, really encourage you to go and check it out. The Shadow Hours. From Kyle Higgins, IGN.com, and let me know what you think. And if you do enjoy it, please tell your friends and your family and get everybody you know to check it out, because the more buzz we can generate for the Shadow Hours, the more likely we are to see it on the big screen as a full-length feature, which I really, really want. And Kyle wants to make it, so I really encourage you to go and check it out. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for WonderCon. Let's give our favorite moment, Manny, to kind of give everybody something positive to end on, if you will.
You know what? You go first.
Okay. You know, this is a really tough choice for me because I could go two ways. Like I could, one of my favorite things about WonderCon this year was actually Mitch Gerrits and the experience he had. You know, I mentioned how he was feeling a little burnt out and got completely re-energized. And even when I went to his spotlight panel, first thing he mentioned was he was worried there was only going to be like three people there. He said four was his, like, as long as there was four people, he was going to do the panel. But less than four, he was, a guy doesn't need to worry, but he's so humble and doesn't realize just how talented and how popular he is. And I'm like, Mitch, you don't need to worry, man. You're a star. So then later in Artist Alley, I go walking by his table and he's got the biggest line of anybody in Artist Alley. Like people are just lined up waiting to just chat with him. It was awesome. It made me so happy for him. So that was really cool. And as I was walking by, I was like, do you see this line, Mitch? Do you see? Proof right here, buddy. So that was really cool. And, you know, he lives in Phoenix just like me and he's a buddy. So that was really, really cool. So maybe I have co-favorite moments. That for a creator that I know and whose work I really admire. And, you know, like I said, I've known Mitch for a long time. So that was really cool. Personally, for me, I mentioned Christopher Judge showed up at the Stargate SG-1 panel. And I got to meet him and chat with him for a few minutes after I got him to – got to tell him the story about how much that show has meant to my wife and I, and our two dogs are named after characters in the show. And so that was super awesome. You know, I follow Christopher Judge on Twitter, and him and I are very kind of similar in our thinking on politics and things like that. And so I always had a feeling that he was a really nice guy and genuine and everything, but I wasn't prepared for just how genuine he was and just how amazing he was. He was just like such a nice guy. And you could tell that, he cared about the fans. Like he wanted to see pictures of the dogs and shook my hand and was like, pleasure to meet you. And yeah, that is a moment I'll remember for the rest of my life. So for me, that was my favorite moment, meeting Christopher Judge, but definitely shout out to Mitch. I'm glad he had such a great time and well-deserved. All right, you're up. What do you got?
Okay. So, thinking about it, just a really personal moment. The moment I shared with you guys earlier about my daughter and, Jeremy Lambert's, the autistic response, that to me meant a lot for me just because of the fact that, my daughter, she's into comics, and for her to have that kind of positive effect on just any writer or any creative team on a book, that really, really made my Sunday. I mean, I've shared it with her mom and with other people just because it's something really cool. My other moment, favorite thing is just getting that original piece of art from, John Boy Myers. I mean, it's so cool. I have a blank wall in my living room that my mom's been begging me to put up something on it, and that's what I'm going to put on it. I don't think that's what she had in mind, but I want to show this off to everyone because it's just so great. It's mine. It's a piece of original art that's mine now. So very excited about it. And yeah, it all happened at WonderCon.
All right. Well, that's going to do it, everybody. Once again, thanks for joining us. Remember, you can go to LRM online for all past episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/TheComicSource is where you can find us on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those platforms. Really hope you were following us this weekend because Manny and I were both putting out a lot of content on Instagram. And that immediately goes to Facebook and Twitter as well. Just a lot of, you know, photos and comments as the news was happening. So, again, I encourage you, if you're not able to go to shows yourself or a particular show that Manny and I are at, be sure that you follow along because we, you know, you're getting it right there, the news in real time. One last thing that I want to mention, I want to actually apologize to you listeners. We were supposed to have a giveaway for everybody at WonderCon. And through circumstances beyond our control, I think it had to do with the big snowstorm back east. The item we were going to give away didn't get delivered in time. And so, again, I really apologize. I know I was talking about it for like a month ahead of time leading up to it. No one's more disappointed than Manny and I that we weren't able to have those as a giveaway for you. I think the next show I'm going to be doing is Phoenix Comic Con. at the end of May. So we'll definitely have them then. So I'm hoping Manny's going to be able to come to Phoenix and join that show, because it's the first time we're going to have that item for you all, and it's super cool. And I want him here to be able to hand them out to all you listeners along with me. But obviously, if he doesn't make it, definitely San Diego Comic-Con will both be there. And even if he doesn't come to Phoenix, we'll still give out some of the giveaways then. So again, I apologize. I literally did everything I could, spent extra money and all that trying to get the item here in time.
That's a great story. Yeah.
Yeah. It just didn't work out. And, if you want to know the story when you come and finally see what the item is and we meet face to face, you can ask me about it. I'll be happy to share the details, because it is funny. So
no, and if I don't get, I'm not at Phoenix, I will be at San Francisco Comic Con in the beginning of June, which will take place in Oakland, here in California.
All right. So once again, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.